I feel very welcomed, everybody. Thoroughly, thoroughly welcome. Thanks, Paul. You always have to get the last word in, don't you? Sit down, Paul. Some of you will know. I'm just going to pop this a little bit over here. Thing. No particular reason this side. Don't feel left out this side. Just allows me to stand in the middle and engage with you. Some of you will know from some of my stories that I've shared with you over quite a few years now that Joe and I have had our fair share of gardening disasters. And when I say Joe and I, what I really mean is me, because the garden is kind of my area that I'm responsible for. And some of you may have been here for some of them. Some of you may have missed a few of them. So I just wanted to give you my top five best garden disasters, if that isn't an oxymoron. And coming in at number five, twanging a branch in my eye, scratching my eye, and ending up with over a year's worth of pain and treatment. That was not a good time for me. At number four, our next door neighbours accidentally weed killing our brand new lawn and killing all our grass. Yeah. Any of you remember that one? Yeah. I think I shared that one recently. Number three, cutting through the wire of my lawnmower and electrocuting myself. Didn't I share that at Christmas? Talk about bar humbug. What, how did I get that into Christmas? Number two, setting fire to the dry pampas grass at the bottom of our garden and showering the whole street with black ash. Biblical proportions, that one was. Burning bush, pillar of fire, had nothing on our back garden on that particular day. But my personal favourite, number one, while spray painting the garden fence green, accidentally spraying the neighbour's washing on the washing line green. That was not in retaliation to number four weed killing accident. Can I just make that clear for the podcast, for the recording? We're clear on that one. So our garden has not had, shall I say, the best of times. And yesterday I was just looking out in our garden. It was a bit wet, drizzly, wasn't it, yesterday? Wasn't the best of weather. I just thought, what can I do to cheer our garden up? It's had a bad time. It's suffered a lot in the last 12 years. Let's see what I can do to cheer it up. And I decided that I would go to the garden centre. So yesterday I went to the garden centre at about, I don't know, half past, what time was it? I don't know what time did you leave, but it's getting close to midday. And I went to the garden centre, but it was pretty busy. I was quite surprised. I couldn't find any garden centre helpers to help me. And so what I did was I did that thing, and some of you may have done this, where you're looking to see who looks like they've nearly finished with the customer that they're with. And you kind of go and you stand alongside them, close to them, pretending that you're not really interested and that you're not really listening. But you know that as soon as they've dealt with that customer, you're going to jump in and you're going to be next in the line. Have any of you ever done that? It's just me. Okay. Right. Look out. If you ever see me sidling up to you, I'm next in line. Okay. That's what it means. And it's in a public place. So I know you shouldn't do this, but sometimes you can't help but overhear the conversation that's going on. And as I went up to this guy, and he was having this chat with this lady, and I just caught the tail end of the conversation, and all I heard him say was this. He said, no, we haven't had any of that in ages, and I don't know when we'll be getting any more. And so the lady that he was dealing with, she left then, and I thought, right, that's my chance. Step in, and I said, hi, I wonder if you can help me. And before I realised what I was saying, I'd said to him, I said, it's always the way that, isn't it? I said, that customer you just had, they always ask for the one thing you haven't got, don't they? And the guy kind of looked at me, and he went, yeah, I guess. And I said, I know it's none of my business to say this. And my brain was going, shut up! Stop it, you're right, it isn't. But the words had already come out of my mouth at that point. I said, I know it's none of my business. I said, don't you have that policy that a lot of places have where you're not allowed to say no to the customer? You don't say, no, we haven't got it. You're meant to say, oh, well, we could order it for you. And, you know, we'll ring you when it's in and you can come back in a few days or a few weeks or we'll post it to you. I said, don't you have that policy here then? He went, oh, no, we do. So now I'm kind of dug myself in half deep. I say, in for a penny, in for a pen. I'm just going to dig myself in completely here. There's no way. I said, just out of curiosity, I said to the guy, I said, all right, you tell me it's none of my business. It's none of my business. Well, listen, What exactly is it that you don't have in stock that that lady was asking for? And he looked at me with the best deadpan expression that you have ever seen. He stared me in eyeball and says, well, we're talking about sunshine. And that's the reason why you should never come in halfway through a conversation. Because actually it was nothing to do with me. I was a little bit embarrassed after he said that. Sunshine in stock. Wouldn't that be great? Cans of sunshine. Rip off the sunshine. I don't know, the market. Anybody get into that, let me know. Because I invented it first. You cut me in. And he said, don't worry about it. It's okay. You helped me buy something. And I did actually manage to buy something for my garden. And what I bought, I will tell you in a bit. Last week, some of you who were here will know that last week I preached on the passage. And the passage that I preached on was, give and it will come back to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. And we discussed the fact of it is anything you give. It includes money, because it, money, yeah, finance about that. But it is anything that you give. I taught that God didn't create giving financially to support the church. He created that particular thing to work greed and selfishness out of humanity. Giving is not God's way of raising money. It's his way of raising his children. And God created life with a flow. And I very briefly mentioned last week this idea of flow. And so today, what I'm going to do is I'm going to focus in, if this is okay with you guys, I'm going to concentrate on this word, flow. And how this idea of flow, there's a picture of it built up at various places in the Bible. Now, some of you will remember a few years ago. Now, this feels like a lot longer, actually. I preached on a three-part series on heaven. Were any of you here and around for that at all? That's why, wasn't it? And in a heaven series, a three-part, I had a lot to fit in. And I was really looking forward to it because I've been planning it for years. And I knew about all these great things that I discovered about. You know, what will heaven will be like? What will we look like? What will be there? Who will be there? What will we do when we're there? And there was all these great answers to these questions that I've been researching for a long time. But some of you may remember this. When I started off the series of the heaven series, the first thing that I preached about was not heaven. The first thing that I said was that I used the passage that Jesus talks about in the Bible where he says there's a wide road and a narrow road. Do you know the one I mean? He says there's a narrow road and few people take it, and ultimately that's the road that leads to eternal life and heaven. And also Jesus said there's a wide road, and we know that that road is the road that most people take because that's what the Bible says and that's what we see in society. But ultimately, that wide road is the one that leads to death and destruction and ultimately hell. And so the first bit of my three-part series, I preached on hell. Because although I wanted to concentrate on the major aspects of heaven and that ultimately heaven is our home, and I wanted to get that message across, it would have been ignorant of me. I think I owed it to the people and you guys that I preached to say, yes, I know this heaven, but didn't I owe it to you to point out that there was also the alternative? And at least if I didn't mention that, and I use that idea of saying, if you wanted to go somewhere and there was a road that would take you there and it would get you to London safely, but there was a wide road where loads of cars were going down it, but that road had a sharp turn to the right just around a bend and off a cliff, and led ultimately to ruin. Although I would say, yeah, go the narrow road. The narrow road's the one you want. The narrow road's great. It gets you one. But wouldn't I owe it to you to also say, but whatever you do, don't go down the wide road. And to point out sometimes what can happen as a result is an important way, an important thing to include. So I think that when you preach anything in church, I don't think you need to cover it from a negative perspective. I really don't. Because if I assume that you guys are going to be, I don't know, anti whatever the preacher at the front preaches. Sometimes the preacher feels like they've got to search really hard for passages from the Bible that's going to try and go up against what you think. And we're going to preach it from a negative point of view. And I've seen and I've experienced, and I've seen it on TV, and I've seen it on some of these American TV channels as well, where there's a guy who's a preacher and he says, if you give, it will result in if you do X, Y, and Z, then such and such will be healed, or your family will come back to Christ, or, you know, if you can't have kids, if you give, you have kids. I think that's crossing a line. I think that's taking it too far. I don't think that that is an approach that we need to do. We need to inspire as a church. Yeah. We need to be positive. We need to encourage. We need to get people to understand that if you build a life that is good for your future, you'll understand the positive impact that it can have on you. At the same time, I can't ignore the fact that if you remove finances from this flow of life that I started to introduce last week, then if you don't put it there as God intends, then there can be a negative impact to your life. In the same way that I wanted to say a bit about hell, but majority about heaven. And so this idea of trying to be as positive as you can with anything that you teach and preach on, whilst at the same time trying to strike a healthy balance with all the information that the Bible gives us as well about other aspects of it, I think is the best way that we can handle anything. Now, I promise, don't worry, I'm not clear enough, I promise. I told you what it was that I was going to show you what I bought from the garden centre. I'm just disappearing. This is a little bit awkward for me to get through. I'll keep talking so you know I've not popped off for one of them hot chocolates. Don't let me twang anybody with this. So this is what I got from the garden centre. Some of you may know, a few years ago, Joe bought me a fruit tree for our garden, but unfortunately, it had an accident and died. I won't go into details. Very traumatic. Very traumatic. I'm over it now. It's very deeply worried. So I got this. This is what the guy helped me choose. This is a fruit tree. Okay, this is a plum tree. It's going to go in our garden at the bottom. As some of you will know, when Joe and I bought a house, we had two mature apple trees in our garden. And I love free food. And the fact that I can go to the bottom of our garden and get free food from an apple tree is amazing. And so there is our latest addition to the free food complement of 30 Eastfield Road. And in a year or two, if it's anything like the last one, it'll make the nicest plums. Like, seriously, the sweetest, freshest, nicest plums that I had ever tasted in my life. And so I'm hoping for more of the same. There you go. Still got the little tagger on it there. And what I want to talk to you today is there's a couple of stories, a couple of places in the New Testament where there's a mention of fruit trees. And the first one that I want to share with you about is Matthew 21:18. Some of you will know this story. You may know it very well. It's quite a short little story, quite a short little passage. And it says this: early in the morning, as Jesus was on his way back to the city, he was hungry. Seeing a fig tree by the road, he went up to it, but he found nothing on it except leaves. Then he said to it, "May you never bear fruit again." And immediately the tree withered. Now, the first time I ever heard that story, I think it was at school, actually. And I remember thinking, what a weird thing for Jesus to do. For crying out loud, it's just a poor, innocent fruit tree that, through no fault of its own, it couldn't give any fruit. And Jesus curses this fig tree. And I've heard people batting around loads of ideas about this story of Jesus. Why did he do it? Was he grumpy? Got out the wrong side of the bed? Whose fig tree was it anyway? Was it his right to curse it? Of all manner of things. And people are going down completely the wrong route about what Jesus was trying to demonstrate when he cursed the fig tree. Jesus did curse the fig tree because there was no fruit on it. But not because he was angry. It was because the fig tree was receiving without passing anything on. You see, a fruit tree's mandate, its job in life, is to produce fruit. That's what a tree that produces fruit does. What a tree say when it produces fruit? See what it's saying? It says, "I have so much life within me that I can't contain this life." And so what a fruit tree does is it forces it out to its extremities and it produces fruit. And so a fruit tree that is burdened down with a weight of fruit is simply saying, I have too much to contain within me of life, and I've got to pass it on. Yeah. But the fruit tree that Jesus cursed, it was in violation of that law. Jesus said we should all of us create and produce a fruitful life. He says if we don't create a fruitful life, what does he say he's going to do? He says he's going to prune us back. He's going to cut us back until such time as we do produce fruit. And the whole idea of a Christian life is that we produce a fruitful life. And that can be personally, it can be corporately as a church. Every time we give something away in personal as a church, we basically what we're saying is we could withhold that. We could keep that fruit for ourselves. But what we've decided to do is we realize that as a Christian and in our Christian walk of life, that actually we live to give. Yeah. Now, there are quite a few stories about trees in the New Testament. I'm not going to use some of them. Not quite sure how I could get Zacchaeus and his tree into this topic. But there is another one, a parable that Jesus told. And this one is in Luke 13:6. And Jesus told this parable, it says, a man had a fig tree growing in his vineyard. And he went to look for fruit on it, but he did not find any. So he said to the man who took care of the vineyard, for 3 years now, 3 blinking years I've been coming down here. I've been looking for fruit on this tree, and there keeps on being no figs on this fig tree. I haven't found any. So cut the thing down. Why should it use up the soil? Sir, the man replied, just leave it alone for one more year. Don't chop it down. I'll tell you what, I'll dig around it. I'll fertilize it a bit more. And then next year, if it doesn't bear fruit, then okay, we'll chop it down, we'll cut it down. And this is a parable that Jesus gives. And for many years, I never got that parable. But let's break this down for a bit. The two people, who are the two people in this parable? There's the vineyard owner. So he's the guy who owns it all. He's responsible for it all. And there's the guy who tends the garden. Well, let's call him the gardener for argument's sake. So there's the owner and the gardener. Now, the owner is the one who's saying, chop down the tree. And the gardener's saying, no, protect it, look after it, tend to it for another year. Question. Which one of those two people in the parable is intended to represent God? You see, the two takes on that same unproductive tree could not be more different from the two different perspectives. And a lot of people think, well, surely God is the gardener. Because surely, God wouldn't be that harsh. But actually, God is the owner. God is the one who's saying, we have given that thing our best tending to. It's had more attention than anything else in the garden for 3 years. And it's still not producing anything. It is violating this natural flow, this creative order that God designed, that what comes through you can then be reproduced and given to other people. It's violating that very law. And some of us don't get that. We're saying, well, that's not the God I... God, no, that's not the God I understand. God, that's harsh. No, why would God say, cut it down? We don't get it. We can't relate to it. But God's saying, if something has had more attention than everything else, if you've done the best that you can in that garden and that tree is still not reproducing fruit, maybe the problem's not the garden. Maybe the problem's in the tree. If you got 10 kids and you feed them all the same food and they all grow, but one of them doesn't grow, then the problem's not in the food. The problem's in the kid. What we do is we say, well, there must be a problem with the garden. And we keep trying to fix the soil, and we try better ways of cultivation, and we have all these excuses that we blame for it not growing. We say, oh, it's the weather conditions, or it's the climate. And we say, that's the reason why we're not growing, or that's the reason why we're not passing on or giving. That's the reason why we're not producing fruit. And we say, oh, you know, it must be the church. The problem must be the situation. It's got to be the environment. And you know, people don't get me. People just aren't caring enough. They don't understand me. It's not the right place for me. And I got to say that if you are in an environment or in a church and those people who are around you are growing and producing fruit, and you're not, maybe the problem's not the church. Maybe the problem's not the environment. Maybe it's something within inside you that needs to change, that will then release you to become a growing and a thriving and a responsive and a cooperative person with the tending that you get. You see, both these passages about the trees, cursing of the fig tree and the parable about the fig tree, they're both alluding to the same principle, that something that receives through its nutrients in the soil and through the sunshine and the rain, and it receives and it receives and it takes in, it should be about living in a flow. There's something that should be produced in the way that a fruit tree produces fruit. And the reason that I say that is because I need you to understand that if receiving and passing on, has ever been something that you've had a fear about, or that you've been worried about, or uncertain about, I want you to know that you don't need to worry about what will come back to you.
Yeah.
If you give in the way that the Bible describes in so many areas about this idea of flow, you don't need to panic and worry and say, well, if I give, that's not going to leave me with enough. Or if I give, I hope I'm going to get a financial breakthrough because I really need one. God says, that's okay. Be cool. You don't need to worry. All you need to do is decide to live in my flow with everything in your life, including your finances. But when you remove your finances from this flow of life, and I said this a little bit last week, I don't mean your mortgage. I don't mean your bills, because you've got to pay those. I mean the finances that you choose where they go. When you remove those and you don't put your finances into the flow of your life, as the Bible describes, I talked a little bit last week about this law of circulation. If you receive but you hold on, if you don't receive and pass on, if you don't allow that flow through you, even though you may feel more secure and you may think you're playing it wise, because you'll say, well, if I keep a hold of this now, I'm going to have enough money for Christmas, or I'm going to have enough money to pay that bills, and I don't like the feeling of uncertainty that it creates within me when I haven't got enough, but maybe when I've got more, maybe I'll give more. Me at the time, This story, this testimony, this guy spoke to me. This guy was a pastor of a church. And one time this guy came into his church, and as the offering plate went round, this guy took out of his pocket a pen. And he put in the basket a pen. And at the end of the service, the pastor went up to this guy. He says, listen, I can't help but ask you. He says, why have you put a pen in? And the guy spoke back to me. He says, I know that's unusual. He says, I know you can't spend that pen. I says, I know it's not money. He says, but I was hoping that by putting that pen into the offering basket, God would see my heart. Because at the moment, he says, I've nothing. He says, I've no money. I'm skint. I'm brassy. I've no money to give. But I didn't want to let that moment go by. He says, that pen, he says, it was given to me 1 year at Christmas. He says, I've treasured that pen. It's this really nice pen. It was a Mont Blanc pen. And he says, and I wore it in my top pocket as long as I've had it. He says, I could never afford to get a pen like that. If I could, I wouldn't have spent it on a pen. I'd have spent it on something else. He says, I treasure that pen. And when the offering basket came past, he says, I just could not let that moment go by without being involved in it. He says, if I didn't have a pen, he says, you know, maybe I'd take my shoes off. And I'm sat there as a member of the congregation, much like you are today, and I'm just listening to it going, wow, that's crazy. And at the same time, that's amazing. And you see that kind of thing in offerings that take place all around the world. So you could go to Africa and you would find that those people bring eggs or parts of their harvest, their crops, like bags of vegetables. You get guys turning up, holding a couple of chickens by their ankles, and the chickens are flapping. It's exciting in some of those offerings. Pretty lively. And I think the chickens know it's the offering. That's why they're flapping around so much. But people just want to be engaged, and when they've not got physically pennies to bring, they bring whatever they have. I just want to put something to you. I hope those of you who understand a little bit about biology and the world as a whole will go with me on this one. I want to put this to you. Every creature that's ever gone extinct in the whole of creation, any creature that went extinct because it got removed from a reproductive flow. So whatever reason that would be, so whether that was, you know, they were hunted and so there were so few left that even losing one potential mate so disturbed the equilibrium of that you know, as opposed to creatures and animals where there are multiplied thousands or millions, where that wouldn't be a problem, or whether it was the environment that was gradually taken away. You get what I'm saying? But ultimately, those animals became extinct because they were removed from a reproductive flow. Yeah. A sailor sailed the seas on a ship as part of a large crew. Life out on the open sea was often dull, and so the sailor took to performing simple magic tricks for the rest of the crew. The crew enjoyed his act so much he became a hit with his shipmates. One day, as the ship laid anchor on the shores of an uninhabited land, a dodo walked up to the sailor and hopped onto his shoulder. The sailor was amazed. "I thought you were extinct," he said, more to himself than anything else. To his utter astonishment, the dodo replied, "Well, I'm not extinct, and what's more, we're not as stupid as people think. In fact, I, for one, can talk perfect English." The sailor couldn't believe his luck and immediately carried the dodo on his shoulder back to the ship. Having every intention of incorporating this dodo into his magic act. Unfortunately, his act was rendered hilarious by the dodo, who would constantly, while sitting on his shoulder, ridicule the sailor after every trick, saying things like, "Oh, the flowers are up his sleeve all along." Or, "Oh, he's a big faker, the rabbit was in the hat all along." One night, the ship began to sink, and while confusion reigned, the sailor was just barely able to get to a tiny lifeboat for him and for his dodo. For 3 days, the sailor and the dodo floated on the rough seas. Strangely, the dodo sat on the opposite end of the lifeboat, just staring at the sailor with a quizzical look in his eye. Finally, on the fourth day, the dodo screamed. "Okay," he said, "I give up. Where the heck did you put the ship?" Here's my question. How many dodos are there left in the world? The dodo in the joker side. Answer, yeah. None. How many rabbits are there in the world? Billions. Billions on the roundabout at the north of Louth, isn't there? It's all over the place. More rabbits than people in the world. And you've got to decide whether you want to be a financial rabbit or a financial dodo. Because it's a choice. You've got to make the choice. Which do you want to be? Because money goes extinct in you and in your life when you remove money from its reproductive cycle. Money doesn't flow to you if it can't flow through you, no more than anything else does. Friendship. If you don't extend friendship and allow it to flow through you, then it's unlikely that you are going to receive friendship back from other people. It's the same with grace and mercy and forgiveness. These are all examples of things which require a flow. Have you ever heard an amazing testimony from somebody when they've needed God to step up for them financially, or they've really needed something? Have you ever heard one of these stories where somebody's gone, "Yeah, and at the 11th hour, God just stepped in and this money was provided," and it comes from the strangest, weirdest, wackiest, strange routes that you could ever imagine? Have you ever heard testimonies like that? Have you ever wondered why? Have you ever wondered why it's a stranger? Or why it's someone you hardly know? Or why it seems so supernatural? You see, if I'm God, and I know that Paul, wave Paul. Everybody say hello to Paul. Say hello, Paul. There you go, Paul. So I'm God, and I know that Paul has a need. Because he's got a need, but nobody else around him knows he's got a need. And I need to get money to him. The only way that I can get money to Paul is I need to find the nearest financial rabbit to him. And I inspire that financial rabbit to him to provide for him and meet his need. But if around him, if he's surrounded by near family and friends who are all financial dodos, I can't, as God, inspire any of those people to meet his need. Because it's not in their way. It's not their mindset. It's not them. They have a lack mentality. Which is why sometimes when God has wanted to bless you and meet your needs, he's done it through the weirdest routes. So an envelope drops through your door or a near stranger comes up to you and says, I know you don't know me, but God's just saw me. And you're thinking, who the heck was that person? Question. Do you think that that person was then God's preferred first choice? Probably not. It could have been. But I think what God would be more interested in is having more financial rabbits to choose from to inspire. There's a story in the Luke, if you look in Luke 25, Jesus tells a story from the Old Testament. He reminds people of the Old Testament. And he's talking about the situation of Elijah the prophet, who is in 3.5 years worth of famine. Which is not good, is it? 3.5 years of there not being enough food and stuff to go around. And so what happened was God sent Elijah 70 miles away to a widow that lived in a completely faraway place called Zarephath. And she was the nearest financial rabbit that God could inspire to feed Elijah a small loaf of bread in that time of famine. Now Jesus says, when he's talking in Luke 4, he says, listen. He says, there were plenty of widows in the area around Elijah where Elijah lived. But they were all financial dodos. Didn't use those words. But they couldn't be inspired. So the nearest financial rabbit was 70 miles away. And for those of you who know the Old Testament story, you'll know that this widow used the last bit of flour and the last bit of olive oil that she had, and she baked him a bread cake. And that was all she had, but she did it. And if you know the end of the story, you'll know that a miracle occurred. And that widow had flour and oil that never ran out for the entirety of that famine. You see, that widow was an example of somebody who wanted to keep what she owned into this flow of life. So that what flowed through her could flow to her. When the people, the Israelites who were in the desert had manna provided. You all know about the manna from heaven, yeah? God provided manna, didn't he, in the desert for his Israelites. There's an entire generation, 40 years worth of them needing to be provided for. And God provided manna. But the first time that God provided manna, and he said, listen, go and pick what you need just for the day. Don't worry, there'll be more tomorrow. I'll provide for you tomorrow. You just get what you're for today. But those people had come from slavery. They'd come from Egypt where they had a slavery and a lack mentality. And so some of them went, oh, if we don't pick enough today, there's not going to be enough tomorrow. And they took more than they should. And if you read it in the Bible, it says that the food that they took, it went off. Because God said, listen, your confidence should not be in the food.
Come on.
Your confidence should be in me.
Yeah.
If you do what I say, don't worry about tomorrow. I will provide for you. If you trust in me, I'll make sure you're okay. But their security was in the stuff.
Yeah.
Their security was in the manna, not in God. Money and stuff will make you promises that only God can fulfill, not money. Money will promise you things like security and happiness. It'll promise you an identity. Church, only God can supply those things. And if your security is in your money, I promise you, you will have a better relationship with your money than you will ever have with God. Now, I'm all for stuff. I like stuff. I like it when stuff comes to me. I like things. I like presents. God likes stuff. But it's just stuff. It's just clothes. It's just a TV. It's just a car. It's just a house. It's just jewelry. It's just stuff. But people are not just stuff. This may sound weird to you, but just go with me. Many people in the world can't afford to give because they don't give. If this flow thing's making any kind of sense to you at all, then it follows to say, if I gave, then I could afford to give because then stuff is going to start coming to me. Cast your bread upon the water, it says in Ecclesiastes. And after a period of time, it will start coming back to you. So to use this analogy of casting your stuff into the water, let's call it the ocean. If we all cast stuff into the ocean, not just on the best tide, not just on one day, but on every tide. If we keep casting our finances, our stuff into this ocean, then if we cast it enough and the ocean is getting full, then eventually, one day, it's got to start coming back to us. And if what you cast into the ocean doesn't come back to you, then maybe what somebody else a little bit further down the seashore is casting into the ocean, or somebody else who's a little bit further and they're casting on every tide, and somebody else is casting, maybe what they cast into the ocean will come back to you. So if you give money, but it's on the odd occasion, that's great. But as they say, one swallow doesn't make a summer. Giving once or twice doesn't make someone a giver. It makes you an inquirer. Makes you an experimenter. Haggai 1:9-11 said, God says, what you earn I'll blow away. Because you're taking care of your own house, but you're neglecting my house. Which suggests that God has a supernatural power to allow people to hold on to and enjoy what they have. And I say that because in Ecclesiastes 5:19 it says, God gives a man wealth and possessions, and God enables him to enjoy them. This is something I wish I'd discovered years ago in my Christian life. There's something supernatural and divine about enjoying your life.
Yeah.
There really is. You can have enough money to sleep on a bed of gold, but only God can provide you with peace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time's nearly up. Okay, let's be specific. Jesus never said to anybody, you need more money. Then you'll be happy. Then you'll be content. Then everything will be okay and you'll be satisfied. And I hope you're starting to get that from what I've said. But if over 80% of Christians don't tithe to a church, then what does that say about Christians' attitudes in general to money? And if, as some people say, tithing is Old Testament, then how much more should we be giving in the New Testament? If Old Testament was law, then how much does New Testament grace say that we should be giving? Tithing is 10%. 10% is for equality. It's not like your income tax. It's not like some people pay no percent or 20% or 40%. It says everybody's 10%. So if you've got a lot, then great, you can give 10% out of your riches. And if you've nothing or hardly anything, then you give 10% out of your poverty. God says, that's cool. That's great. I'm not interested in an amount.
Yeah.
I'm interested in your heart. By the way, I'm using the wrong language here because tithing is not giving. Tithing is bringing. Because you can't give what's not yours. You can give offering, but tithing, it's a bit that belongs to God. None of us give our income tax. We don't bring it. It's not an option. It's the same with this amazing idea that God has called the tithe. Tithing is God's best financial stewardship idea. Keeping our money, helping us understand, and an easy way in for keeping our money in the flow of life. And for every generation that there's ever been since God introduced this idea, for every generation of some people who've got it and some people who haven't, for the people who haven't, it's never caused God to reconsider his idea. He didn't say, oh, that last generation, they didn't like that. Oh, I'll change that. Because Jesus endorsed the tithe and the Apostle Paul endorsed the tithe. And so whatever comes through the cross and out the other side is still with us today. If this idea of flow has made any kind of sense to you, and if you consider this church to be somewhere that you call home, I just want to put this out there to you. Tithing is something that you could do. You don't have to tithe to come to this church. Tithing is not a membership fee. We don't require you. We don't shake a bucket as you come in and say, entry fee, please. You can come to this church for the rest of your life and be inspired, be faith-filled, be blessed. That will happen. But if you feel that you want to enter into this flow to give part of what God gave you back to him, then see this guy here, Richard. Just raise your hand, Richard, because this guy can get money back off the tax man. What? That's a superpower. Whether you do it through your bank or whether you put it in the basket, it doesn't matter. He can get money back from it if you are a taxpayer. It's free money for the church. But we're not doing it for the money. God didn't create giving to support the church. He created it to work greed and selfishness out of humanity. Giving is not God's way of raising money. He doesn't need money. He created everything. He does not, I repeat, he does not need your money. He's not raising money. He wants to raise you. Yes. And God created life with a flow. If it can flow through you, it will flow to you. So I'm done. I'm finished. That's our series over on giving. And if you want to know anything about that, if you want to inquire, you want to ask questions, you want to come and have a good argument with me, you come and have a chat with us. I don't mind. I'm not offended. I hope you're not too. Because money means a lot to us. Because ultimately we need it. But God says, hey, I'll provide. I'll take care of you. You just enter this flow of life. You'll be okay. God bless you.